Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Welcome to Freedom of Species, where a show that brings animal advocacy to the airwaves of 3CR community radio. Before us, you heard Sally from Out of the Pan, featuring Sandra Thom on her book Autistics at Work. And Sally finished up with the song The Best Years of Our Lives by Richard Clapton. So, yeah, thanks for that show from Sally. And make sure you check out of the Pan 12 till 1 every Sunday. And you can also, if you missed that show and want to hear more about autism at work, check it out via the 3CR website or your favourite podcast app. We also appreciated the shout out from Sally from the Nut to the Cup with Melbourne Cup coming up pretty soon. And yeah, it has been nice in recent years to see that that messaging from not just those specifically within the animal advocacy movement, but also within broader sort of progressive spaces. There seems to be a real anti-Melbourne Cup sentiment, which is been great to see that sort of movement reach so broadly. On the show today, we're going to be covering the show Poker Face and how it represented vegans, but also animal rights. And we'll also use that to talk more generally about representations of animal rights and vegans in pop culture.
A little bit of a rustling sound in the studio here. Sorry about that. What's that rustling, Nick?
It's our dog, Moo Moo.
Okay, nothing about us without us. We have our dog in the studio to also give views. I should say I'm Katie.
Yeah, thanks.
Occasional guest on 3CR.
Yeah, I'm Nick. And yeah, I guess maybe to start things off, we could talk a little bit about the show Poker Face. I feel like it was a fairly popular show, but not like something like Game of Thrones, where regardless of how interested or otherwise you were in it, you kind of know about it. Like, I'm sure this show could have slipped a bunch of people by, and it actually did slip us by until fairly recently.
Streaming on Stan in Australia. So it stars Natasha Lyon, who some of you may know from Russian Doll, also the cult lesbian film But I'm a Cheerleader, which is great.
Orange is the New Black as well, I think she's
in. Yep, that's right. She's Charlie Kale, who's a human lie detector. Basically, she can almost always tell when someone's telling a lie, and it leads her to solve a series of mysteries. It's a very, very good show, and is it two seasons?
Yep. Yeah, definitely. We recommend the show, animal rights themes aside, but it was sort of a nice little bonus to see animal rights themes in one episode in particular, which we'll cover in depth, which was The Stall, series 1, episode 3. But also there were some perhaps more subtle animal rights themes throughout the rest of the series as well, which we might get onto as well. I guess, do you want to give it, and I guess maybe we'll mention up front, we will be giving some spoilers for that episode.
I was going to say, we're going to be spoiling season 1, episode 3, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, if anyone is...
It is fairly early on.
So
if you want to avoid spoilers, you might want to skip ahead until the next part of the discussion.
we'll see.
Or it might be the whole show. We'll see.
Yeah. I usually like, we're going to cover this, and this, and we only cover this. I generally only mention the first thing we're going to discuss because who knows. But yes, you can, if you are listening to the podcast version, you can hit pause on this, go watch the episode, and then come back
That's
if you
true.
Like. But... people listening different ways. But The Stall, do you want to say anything a bit about the episode in general before we get into the themes? I mean, I feel like it's pretty central to the episode in this case, but yeah.
So I guess pretty much each episode is a little standalone mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, it starts, it's in Texas, a roadside barbecue joint. And these people that are famous for making their barbecue rub or the barbecue sauce and seasoning, and being all animal-based barbecue, so dead cows in this case. So I'm pretty sure it's mostly dead cows.
Mm-hmm.
It's a couple of brothers, right?
Yep.
And they're black men as well. So it's kind of interesting because it's Texas, but there's these kind of black men that are dressed like cowboys and I guess are trying to go along with that Texas vibe,
mm-hmm.
Which can often be quite racist and white-centric.
Mm.
And so these brothers are running this very popular barbecue joint. One of them also does a radio show, live radio show about it. And Natasha Lyon comes to this town to get a bit of casual work and meets one of the brothers and ends up giving him, he says he's really into animals, so she gives him a couple of DVDs. So they're kind of classic ones like Charlotte's Web and Babe, but also one called Okja, which is a real film.
Yeah. Well, all three of them are real. But
Sorry. Do you want to just talk a little bit about what Okja is?
Yeah, I mean,
it's a documentary, right?
No, it's a movie. It's like, yeah, a feature movie. So, yeah.
But it's a real life doco.
No.
Sorry. Okay, you explain.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
So, yeah, I haven't seen it myself. We have covered it on Freedom of Species, but with some guests who have seen it. But so Okja is a 2017 science fiction action adventure film directed by Bong Joon-ho. The Parasite director.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. The film is about a teenage girl who raised a genetically modified super pig called Okja. And when Okja is taken to the United States by a meat industry corporation, the girl goes on a mission to rescue Okja from mistreatment and slaughter. So, yeah, pretty strong animal rights themes. We did cover it on the show all the way back in the 2nd of June 2024. The show was Pop Culture and Animal Rights, Okja, Chicken Run and Peep Show. And, yeah, it was interesting that Charlie said, because, yeah, Charlie definitely didn't have the motivation to, you know, she wasn't trying to do a vegan conversion.
No, she thought you like animals, and so here's some films.
Yeah.
And this one's got a pig.
I think it was like, you've got a lot of free time, I'll just see what I can pick up from the Roadhouse or something like that. So gave him some movies to pass the time. I think because, like, the way he cooked the meat was like a slow cooking process. I'm not sure anyway. He had time sitting in his trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And Charlie says about Okja, I only got to see the first half, but it's cute. And so my guess from reading that synopsis is that, yeah, the first half is her just kind of befriending the pig and them getting on is really nice and happy.
Before the
And then the second
the meat
half,
company.
Not so much as well. So, interesting premise for the show. And from that, I guess because the sort of the animal rights and vegan themes were so strong, I was curious about, was this is there a vegan somewhere involved in the show?
Mm-hmm.
And like, especially because there's other animal rights themes too, which we might touch on later.
In different episodes,
yeah. But yeah, I couldn't find anything along those lines to either confirm nor deny that. But yeah, it didn't necessarily seem that was the intention of the show. They're saying that, so the writer was Wyatt Kane, and they were saying, they worked with Wyatt. He's got a dark sense of humor. There was definitely a play this episode. He also has a deep love of barbecue. So yeah,
interesting.
You can get vegan barbecue, but that kind of like suggests perhaps not a vegan or even a vegetarian.
Should we explain what George's change after the film though?
Oh, I forgot about that. I do actually have the, a little clip.
Okay.
Yeah, so why don't we play that? Yeah. So this is, yeah, George again, who's been involved in this meat company for a long time and is kind of seems to be more than his brother, like the brains behind the operation. His brother, the main thing he created was like floss to get the meat out of your teeth.
Yeah.
But he's actually the one who's sort of like cooking it all well and
the
stuff
seasoning
like that.
And all that.
Exactly, yeah. So basically, yeah, this is him, George, after he's seen those three movies. And again, Okja was the one that particularly got a mention.
George.
I'm a murderer. We have built a temple of carnage.
You bet your ass, brother, we have. Oh, wait a minute. Look here, George. When we done with this beef rub deal, okay, how about you and Mandy take a vacation, go to the golf and celebrate? It'll be your second honeymoon. Matter of fact, here, I got the contract right here. We can get everything done.
I don't need a vacation. I need out.
You need out of what?
Out of all of it. The restaurant, the beef rub deal, the self-perpetuating cycle of endless cruelty. I'm going vegan, Taffy.
You're going vegan?
I no longer want to participate in the sale of animal products.
Okay, George, you're a renowned pit master. Your whole dang life has been animal products.
Which is why this is hard for me. I'd like to take my half of the business and begin the next phase of my journey.
So, yeah, fairly upfront in terms of the messaging around that. Yeah, again, it wasn't necessarily the intention of it didn't seem to be the intention of the writers or anything to sort of encourage people to engage with Anne Rice. So it was kind of just an interesting storyline. And I would say it was a popular show, and from what I pick up, quite critically acclaimed and that kind of thing. But also that episode...
It still is going as well. Like,
is it?
The show, Poker Face.
There is still another series?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
you said,
yeah.
Like, it's done. I don't think it's
Yeah,
done.
I guess I'm talking about that series or whatever. But, yeah, that show, that episode in particular was a particularly, like, popular one and that kind of thing, which I think sort of magnifies the importance of having those themes discussed. If it was just something that was done kind of to promote veganism, but it wasn't, like, necessarily very good artistically or reaching a mm-hmm. big audience, then it would have less impact. But I feel like, yeah, I was sort of... following up some of the discussions on that, which I might get into in a moment, like discussions on Reddit and those kind of things as a result of the episode and kind of reaching a fairly broad audience in terms of engaging with that issues around consuming animals. I did something that was significant to me was that I thought it seemed quite plausible in that he was not actually involved in slaughtering the animals, right? Like
the carcasses and yeah. they cook them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there definitely have been cases of people who have been directly involved in the slaughter of animals who have had that change of heart. But to me, like, it would make sense that even though that was, again, a fictional movie, but like having scenes of slaughter and those kind of things to someone who hasn't been introduced to that any more than anyone else. Whereas if you're
in the Okja film, you mean?
In the Okja, yeah, yep. Yeah. Whereas if you're actually doing that, you're like, yeah, I know. Like, you might still have a movie that might make you see the animals in a different perspective, and often to do that work, you have to sort of dehumanize the animals and kind of view them as objects. So you might see something.
I mean, we dehumanize. That's a weird.
It is the wrong word to use. Yeah, it is the wrong word to use.
You have to objectify them.
Objectify. That's better. Yeah. 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 But it seemed like, again, from what we see in the show, he seems like quite a nice, compassionate guy. And so once he realized, oh, this is actually what's going on behind it, kind of makes sense he'd have that shift.
And interestingly, which you don't usually see in pop culture, is the non-vegan Charlie is supportive of and thinks it's very brave and bold of him to, you know, basically change his entire life and business and his wife's involved with the business as well, and it doesn't seem like she's necessarily on board with his change.
No,
so the fact that this stranger that he's just met is supportive of him doesn't really follow. Usually vegan vegetarians is the trope of being mocked or being too extreme and really just actually having desire to meet, whether it's, you know, Lisa Simpson or Phoebe and her friends or whatever. That's a common thing. You don't usually see a non-vegan there being supportive and being like, no, actually, you're doing the right thing.
Yeah, yeah. No, I felt like, again, most people kind of weren't supportive, but it seemed more that was more like on financial grounds, like you're ruining our business. But yeah, the main character was very supportive. And yeah, there was quite an interesting article which we'll draw on throughout this discussion, which was called "I Am a Murderer, Poker Faces Vegan Feeling" by Bridget N. McRae on popmatters.com. And yeah, talking about that issue of the representation of... the representation of vegans in pop culture, that it was quite a, quite a positive, well-rounded, the author was saying there's very, very few well-rounded vegetarian or vegan characters in the world. I was actually thinking about those examples you gave and which the author gave in that article as well. So Lisa Simpson, The Simpsons, I feel like that's kind of a complicated one. So that in The Simpsons, there was actually a vegetarian writer who later became vegan.
Oh, okay.
I remember hearing an interview with him. And so I feel like the representation of Simpsons, like, yeah, again, it did seem it was perhaps like he was saying he kind of really pushed for that back in the early days.
I thought it was John McCartney. Said I wouldn't. Sorry, Paul McCartney, the Beatles.
Oh, okay.
Remember, he was like, "I won't be. I'll only be on your show if you make Lisa a vegetarian."
Okay, yeah, maybe.
So that was also an element.
Yeah. So this was Sam Simon was the writer. But yeah, he was only involved in the show in the early days, so 1993. But maybe there are multiple factors. But I've just heard him talk like in an interview about like her vegetarianism, and his kind of the way he wanted to be wrote and those kind of things. So I feel like it wasn't necessarily like a totally dismissive representation in The Simpsons, but I feel like overall, I feel like that the author, the author of this article, Bridget McRae, it generally fits. I feel like it was generally mocking you don't make friends with salad and those kind of things.
True, and I think, I mean, I've obviously seen every Simpsons episode. I'm not a fanatic or anything, but I've seen every episode of Friends.
Yeah,
and there's a few things where like, oh, Phoebe wants to eat meat because she's pregnant, or then she finds out that you can have a lobster dinner for $1, and her friend's like, but you don't eat animals, and she's like, I'd eat you for $1. So, but maybe the Lisa Simpson character is a little bit more consistent, even if she's heavily mocked and not doesn't really have a supportive family or friends around her supporting that decision.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like, though, it is about more about her sort of like, not conforming because she doesn't go back to eating meat, but like her sort of more like accepting the meat eating culture rather than the sort of meat eaters kind of accepting her. Like she kind of compromised. Oh, like I was kind of all staunch and now I'm going to sort of keep quiet about it. Like be a good vegetarian rather than a bad one as well.
Yeah, just don't say
anything. Yeah, I feel like there was.
It's like when I was went on the radio and they had the food critic from the West Australian when we lived in Perth, and he was like, after I was on air with him, he was like, I don't mind as long as they don't make it political.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, it's not just a preference for me that I just want to eat plant-based food. I freaking love like hot dogs and, you know, chicken nuggets and chicken wings. I'm just going to go on a rant here about food. I like the vegan versions of because I like those foods. You know, I like the vegan versions of those foods. It's not, it is political, and that's why we're talking about it. Otherwise, it would, like, would I do a podcast about how much I love chips? Probably. I do love chips a lot, but it wouldn't be the same.
Wouldn't be a weekly show. Might be a one-off special.
Chip advocacy on the air.
But yeah, I think that's a good point about the Phoebe on Friends, that it, like, I felt like a lot of that representation was like appeasing a predominantly meat eating audience. So, oh, vegetarians are flaky and they actually want to eat meat, so it's kind of okay if you do. Another line that comes to mind from Friends as well, when it was like, so it was something about like a fur jacket, and then Phoebe's like, animals didn't have to die for this. And then
that's right, I forgot about that. She puts on the fur coat and she's like, damn, I actually look really good. And she wants to keep the fur coat.
Okay.
You don't remember that?
I don't remember that, but that definitely feeds into the sort of the narrative that you were talking about. I was more thinking, I think Chandler says something like, yes, but it does oppress some like this like non-fur thing.
Oh, it was just made by kids in Bangladesh
something
for
like
7 cents an hour.
Something like that, yeah. And I feel like that is also like a common idea around vegans or vegetarians in that case of like
hypocrisy.
Yeah, well, like you're not gonna have no harm in the world, therefore you shouldn't even try and prevent harm, basically.
That you should care about you don't care enough about humans, that the only animal rights people only care about animals, they don't care about the other animals, which humans are animals. I mean, obviously the activism that we're involved in, that we promote and that you promote on the show, is intersectional veganism, which is basically looking at the oppressions that women face and queer people face, and how we should be seeing racism and sexism in the same way that we would look at speciesism. It's just another one of those isms.
Yeah, and I feel like also that argument also kind of always assumes that like animal products are produced in the best possible conditions. So you've either got the choice between a vegan product, which is created in horrible conditions, or somehow
they'll be like, oh, this vegan product has too much salt, or it used a lot of water.
Yeah,
but they don't compare actually how much the health aspects or how much water it takes to produce the animal based product.
Yeah, and I feel like there is actually a significant difference between a vegan product produced under bad conditions labor-wise and a non-vegan product. Like the fact that animals are not killed is a significant issue, but of course, as you mentioned, from an intersectional standpoint, obviously the best of both worlds is being concerned about whether animals are used, but also being concerned about the human conditions of the labor as well. We might be a good opportunity to go for a song there, and we'll continue discussing it after the break. So I wanted to play a song. This is from an Australian artist who's vegan. The song itself isn't really about veganism or anything to do with veganism, more like an anti-capitalism kind of thing. But yeah, I recently heard this artist on a podcast and heard that they were vegan, so I thought it'd be cool to play them. So this is Montaigne with It's All About the Money.
Freedom of Species thanks Animal Free Science Advocacy for their financial support of this program. Animal-free science advocacy works to create a future where no animals are harmed in the name of science. And scientific progress is advanced through animal-free research methods. Become a member today by visiting animalfreesci.org.au. That's animalfreesci.org.au.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species on 3CR Radical Radio. On the show today, we're discussing the show Poker Face and some of the animal rights themes in the show. I did mention earlier I was going to briefly look back into some of the Reddit discussions around this show. So it was this episode, The Stall, was discussed on the vegan Reddit, which is perhaps less surprising, but there was discussion around the movie Okja and that idea of like people actually transitioning to veganism as a result of seeing that show. I think perhaps more important is that there was discussed on the Poker Face Reddit some of these issues around around the sort of political themes on the show. It was just interesting that someone obviously from more like the conservative side of politics kind of lumped in veganism with like the leftist politics of the show, which I think is accurate. It's quite good, but it's just kind of interesting that they were making those connections. So someone said, I'm a little worried after watching this episode. First, they started spewing leftist rhetoric about conservatives.
Because we should say that there's also a subplot around a conservative radio host station that's being listened to and this dog that seems to be really obsessed with that radio station.
Yeah, and she's like, it's a MAGA dog.
Yeah,
which is kind of funny. And then they are trying to say a barbecue pit master is suddenly going vegan. I hope they switch to being entertaining in episode 4 instead of pushing an agenda. There's the discussions around that of, that like some people are saying, well, there are lots of examples of ranches and slaughterhouses going vegan and starting a sanctuary. Look them up. And again, there are quite a few cases of that in real life. And people were saying that there was also like they had like the delicious looking barbecue as well. So yeah, and I think that definitely, again, it wasn't necessarily the intention of the show's creators to have that, but incidentally, I think it did kind of bring up those themes. This is more about Okja rather than the movie, but it does bring up Okja, but people saying like they quit meat after watching it, or at least they thought they should not be eating meat even if they carried on. That's quite a common thing as well. Just interesting to see, like, again, sort of a broad audience engage with those issues which were raised in this particular episode. I thought an interesting angle, which Katie's already touched on a little bit, is that the sort of the intersections there between veganism and race on the episode. So they're saying, talking about Taffy. So again, the brother of George who goes vegan.
I thought George went vegan.
Sorry,
Taffy is the brother who's not.
Yeah.
It responds badly to George's choice to go vegan.
So I was saying Taffy is the brother of George, the one who... Yeah, I give you...
No, the way you said it confused me.
That's fair. So Taffy, the one who is not vegan, they said, as a black man who wears a cowboy hat... again, this is reading from the article from McRae, which we'll put a link to. But they were saying, as a black man who wears a cowboy hat, a bolo tie, a denim shirt and a vest... He defies a stereotypical white Texan identity. Yet Texas culture accepts him because of the particular ways he bolsters the state's meat culture. He hosts a popular radio show praising meat and has a shady big beef rub deal he's trying to close. A vegan brother doesn't fit the Texas narrative he's constructed for himself. So it's kind of in those sort of intersections of like race and Southern identity and veganism in with that as well. I also wanted to mention, I guess to briefly touch on, again, going from the article they were talking about, George, and again, we've touched on the spoilers already, but this is a very big spoiler for the episode.
Season 1, episode 3, yep.
Yeah, but...
Poker Face on Stan.
Yep, so George is murdered by his brother, Taffy. And they were saying,
because of his desire to go vegan and basically upend their business.
Exactly. So they mentioned in the article, George's murder implies that seeing the animal behind the meat is dangerous. Despite the diet's growth, those who refrain from eating animals face serious backlash, so much so that there's now a term for it, vegaphobia. I've also heard some people use the term vegan phobia to kind of have it specific about that, but that was the original term, vegaphobia. So in Great Britain, for example, the police recorded 172 hate crimes against vegans from 2015 to 2020.
I should probably say that that probably is legally considered a hate crime because it's not.
Yeah, true. Most cases
is not a protected group or anything like that. So that's kind of interesting they would frame it that way.
Yeah. They were saying in the article, as members of the alt-right have created a battle between plant-based milk and dairy milk, zealously insisting that drinking soy milk is a threat to white masculine supremacy.
This kind of myth that goes around that soy milk will turn you gay or increase your levels of estrogen.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And that they were talking about, I won't go into depth into this one, but yeah, apparently there's a show, Yellowstone, which I haven't seen. Have you seen
it? I've heard of it. I haven't watched it.
Yeah, so there was a vegan in that show who was white, but they were saying, why does George in Poker Face have to die and not Summer, who was a character in Yellowstone? And they were saying, because as a black vegan, George is considered more of a threat to white American culture than Summer. And this is where Poker Face provides a far more complex vegan representation than Yellowstone, a representation that examines both race and food. I think it's interesting that they sort of use this as an opportunity to talk about black veganism being on the rise, particularly in the US.
I guess veganism is often seen as the domain of white, young, white, privileged people.
It is.
We don't really see much representation of vegans of colour, even though we know that there's very high proportions in, say, China, and there's a growing amount of black Americans identifying as vegan.
Absolutely, yeah. And so I feel like sometimes even like those vegans coming from a more intersectional standpoint, social justice standpoint, can sometimes almost like accept that, like, oh, we have to be careful pushing veganism too much because it is a white thing or whatever. And actually in trying to be sort of progressive and aware of your privilege and that kind of thing, you're actually like silencing or disregarding all the vegans of color that are out there as well.
Not true. We know that there's been cultures across the world and the non-European world that has centered veganism and vegetarianism.
And definitely at least, and
you think about Ethiopia, Eritrea, obviously parts of China, the Seventh-day Adventists, the Jains in India.
Yeah.
There's a broad range of people. And I think there was also maybe a group in Israel. It was a long time ago. But it's a myth that it's a white progressive, only white people are pushing this.
Yeah, and yeah, I have seen like an article about an African-American vegan saying that sometimes white vegans are kind of like, wow, that's so great that you're vegan, you know what I mean? Like,
condescending.
You're black, and they're like, well, actually, and they cited this kind of similar research, so that mentioned here that, so 8% of black Americans identify as vegan versus 3% of Americans overall. So it basically means that African-American...
More than twice as many.
Yeah, 2 to 3 times as likely. So basically, based on similar research to that, that black vegan was saying, well, I should be congratulating, you're white and yet you're still vegan. Like, it should kind of be the other way around. Katie kind of mentioned those intersections. AFCO, we've played her on the show and interviewed her on the show before as well. But AFCO and Silco have written about, intersection of racism and speciesism. On a little bit of a side note, I did recently hear an interview with Bob Villain, who has made headlines recently.
Yeah, Bob Villain with a V, Bob Dylan. Yeah. The one who's... very pro-Palestine, musical artist,
they're a band I already listened to, but most people probably hadn't heard of them, right? Like now they've kind of become into the mainstream with their chant, "Death to the IDF," And yeah, I heard an interview with Bob Villain on Louis Theroux's podcast, and yeah, it was just interesting that it came up that like he was vegan, and yeah, he's really into like healthy eating and those kind of issues. But it also
sorry,
Bob Villain.
Okay, so I thought it was a band. I thought you said there was a band.
So the band, well, the band is Bob Villain, but I guess the singer of Bob Villain. But yeah, okay, yeah, okay. It's complicated because the singer is called Bob Villain. I think the other guy in the band is called Bobby Villain. But
oh, okay,
it's a bit complicated. But yeah, anyway, the singer of the group Bob Villain. It just came up incidentally in the discussion with Louis Theroux when he was discussing their recent controversy that he is vegan, but also again sees it as a health thing, but also really sees it as like an ethical and political stance as well, and kind of in line with his politics, anti-racism politics. He's like a black guy in the UK and sings a lot about dealing with racism, that kind of thing, and kind of sees veganism as part of those other issues around around challenging the oppression of Palestinian people, against racism and colonialism in general. And yeah, I think we can hopefully see how those are inherently tied in terms of like veganism being against hierarchy, against oppression, against suffering, against domination. How, just as that conservative person on the Reddit said, it really does fit with kind of leftist or progressive or social justice politics. Yeah. Another, this is probably a little bit more of a stretch, but they also, I thought it kind of found it interesting that they mentioned the little fascist dog, Charlie called it, the dog mm-hmm. who likes the sort of the racist like talkback radio, how the dog actually like changes the channel and goes back to that, and Charlie ends up accepting that as well.
Yeah, she rescues this little dog who's constantly yapping. She puts on the radio, and then it's only when she puts on the conservative talk show host, which is, as I mentioned earlier, is a subplot in there, that the dog quietens down and she's like, okay, fine, we're going to have to put on this conservative radio to keep the dog happy.
Yeah, and the article mentions each of these actions is framed as the dog's choice. The dog is sentient, and that sentience results in a blurring of a line between human and animal. They also mentioned that the dog's ultimate choice is an attempt to save George. I don't know if you remember that bit, but he was like barking outside and stuff like that.
Yeah, trying to save George, who is the one who's gone vegan, whose brother is killing him. The dog is trying to save his life.
Yeah, now saying viewers are used to seeing a human saving an animal and not the other way around. Yeah, and so there are those kind of interesting, again, that's definitely much more of like a subtle kind of thing, but I think that kind of leads us into some of the maybe more subtle themes about animal rights in the show. Again, the vegan storyline was very obvious and in your face.
in your face. It's kind of funny, given the writer was like, oh, we just thought it was an interesting storyline.
It is interesting,
The writer doesn't seem to have wanting to be promoting a certain message, but it did seem clear.
Yeah, absolutely.
If I had seen this as a non-vegan, I'd probably be thinking, oh, maybe I'm going to watch that movie, Okja.
Yeah, that's right. And then that was more change, or even just from watching the thing, people might just be kind of reminded of the animals behind the meat they're consuming as well. So, yeah, again, I think in this case it is fairly significant, even though it is, again, it wasn't necessarily the intention of the, or definitely wasn't the intention of the people writing it. We better go to another song, and then we'll get into some of the maybe more subtle themes of animal rights throughout the series, Poker Face, after this. So, yeah, we're going to play the song Foie Gras. This is by Keshi featuring Factor Chandelier. And another one that isn't necessarily about veganism, there is a brief mention of foie gras, which is like a particularly cruel sort of animal product, but is just, yeah, another example of a vegan artist and someone who I guess started listening to just because of liking other politics, but it was kind of cool that I get a bit like Bob Villain sees veganism as part of these broader social justice politics. So this is Keshi and Factor Chandelier with Foie Gras. It's normal to feel like Danny
Trejo's a... Freedom of Species would like to thank Project Fresh Start for their financial support of this program. Project Fresh Start provides free plant-based food to the community, with a focus on providing healthy, fresh plant-based food and education around healthy eating and living in a way that sustains the individual, the community, the animals, and the planet. To find out more about our community lunches and programs, check out projectfreshstart.org.au.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species on 3CR Community Radio. We are discussing themes of animal rights in Poker Face, and which is a TV show.
Streaming on Stan? Sorry, Natasha Lyon.
Not a paid advertisement. again, that we've spoken about the episode The Stall, which had some really blatant animal rights themes in your poker face. But
in your poker face?
I'd say in your face. I said in your face.
Oh, God. So I don't know if you're misspeaking or trying to tell a silly joke.
So in terms of some of the more subtle animal rights themes as well, so each episode was based around a murder, generally a murder of a human. But in season 2, episode 6, it had the first animal murder victim, and like that was the murder.
That was the main murder that had to be solved, yes.
There was no human murder in that show. The murder victim of a gerbil named Joseph, mm-hmm. which is, I think, like a dark comedic
Joseph Goebbels.
And so, yeah, Charlie's kind of investigating the death of the gerbil. So exploring the theories, themes of animal murder. And, yeah, I think that was, like, yeah, again, somewhat significant in terms of rather than just, well, it's an animal, who cares? It's, like, kind of treated the same, like, just investigated the same.
Yeah, and not only would that be who cares, but it's actually... we plan and routinely murder and try to figure out how to do the most efficient murder to make the most money for non-human animals.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even like, oh, we don't really care. It's like, this is, you know, $1 billion of business. Not specifically for gerbils, but for other animals. And I mean, people around the world eat all kinds of different things. I don't know if anyone eats gerbils, but I wouldn't be surprised if there are people out there who do.
And the other episode that, also sort of had somewhat animal rights themes as well, was season 2, episode 4, which had a disgruntled police officer, Fran, feed rival, and again, spoilers for these episodes as well, police officer Fran freed rival cop Greater Joe Reptile, Gator Joe.
So this is set in Florida.
Yeah.
And you have this cop who's, you know, he's not very good at his job, but he does a podcast and he's got this rescued alligator. And it's very funny, played by Kumail Nanjiani.
Mm-hmm.
But this real kind of stereotype would usually be this like white Floridian cop who's real dick, for us to say that. A female cop who's always being overlooked for promotion because he's always getting all the attention and all the likes, and it's this real boys' club.
Mm-hmm. So basically, she feeds the
alligator
laxatives in hopes of embarrassing him after his 7th win in a row for Florida's Cop of the Year.
She doesn't feed the alligator; she feeds Gator Joe.
Oh, that's right.
She gives the human cop the laxatives.
Yeah.
I don't know how embarrassed the alligator would be.
I was getting confused. I was reading like feed rival cop Gator Joe reptile laxatives, but they were
reptile laxatives.
So I thought it was like Gator Joe's reptile laxatives. Okay. But yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah, yeah. So she covers up killing him using his alligator Daisy as a scapegoat. And so, yeah, Charlie saves her, like Daisy the alligator, from getting killed, ending with the gator free and Fran working in an alligator sanctuary. So I thought that was kind of another similar thing where it's like those who are, like, yeah, those who are kind of helping animals are kind of the good ones of the show.
And
yeah,
it's interesting because people see this guy, he's like, oh, he rescued this baby alligator. Oh, that's so great.
Mm-hmm.
But then he's... doesn't try to free this alligator or put them in a sanctuary they can live semi-free if they can't be reintroduced into the wild. He's doing all these stunts and feeding this alligator Oreos and things that probably are not going to be very good for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all seen as like good fun and that's his thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a weird thing where it's like, oh, he's got this power, he's an alligator. These people are like, oh, we love the alligator, that's great. Not seeing that he's actually through... his supposed affection or whatever, totally misusing this alligator and not giving them a good life.
That's right. And they were saying while Daisy was not a murder victim, Daisy would have been killed had Charlie have not have stepped in. So it kind of fits with that fits with that broad theme. Yeah, I'm just trying to work out that finishing up with. Yeah, so I guess I was going to go to another comedy club. I'm trying to work out time. Have we got time? Yeah, maybe we'll do it. So, yeah, we'll finish up with just a little bit about talking about veganism and stand-up comedy, just very briefly. So, yeah, I'm just trying to... Time. editing on the fly.
Well, I'm saying we can cut the song short at the end if we need to.
Yeah, that's true. But, yeah, all right. Well, why don't we play it? So, yeah, I want to play a little bit of comedy from... Simon Amstel, who's a vegan comedian, or a comedian who is a vegan, I guess. And yeah, this is basically, some comedy from his Netflix special Set Free. And I guess just what I really noticed watching this as someone who's like does lecturing and public speaking, that kind of stuff, I really kind of see the audience kind of pull back and kind of get them offside talking about veganism in here. So you'd see if you can pick that up through the audio or not.
Maybe some of the misogyny comes from the fact that we were ejected from the womb. We weren't allowed to stay there. And then maybe we were breastfed, but then that had to be stopped as well. We definitely miss our mother's breast milk. Of course we do. Of course we do. Otherwise, why would we have started stealing milk from other species? The cows must be thinking... this is nothing to do with you. This is for my child. It's not for your Cocoa Pops. Maybe this is an issue with your mother? Imagine if calves started attaching themselves to human women. And then complaining of lactose intolerance.
What, did you pick that up at all or not?
No, I didn't pick up that anyone got offside. But I was more focused on, I hadn't heard that, so I was more focused on hearing the comedy and thinking it was quite, I hadn't heard the whole thing about calves sucking on humans. That's really funny. So people talk about why don't you go suck on a cow, cow's harder, which most people would not want to do, but I like that.
Yeah, no, I there are laughs, but they're kind of like nervous laughs. And it was just kind of interesting seeing that through the lens of, I was listening to an interview with Simon Amstel, and this was about like one of his previous specials where veganism was more prominently featured. And he was saying he can pretty much get the audience to unite behind anything except veganism. Mm-hmm. And that particular special, that was kind of the only sort of vegan theme material in there. And yeah, I think there is that idea of, there's a sort of phrase from Roger Yates, who's a sociologist and animal advocate in Ireland, uses the phrase animal loving, animal harmers. And the idea that we love animals as a society, but also eat them as well. And so, yeah, and I think that is particularly relevant to the Western world, where there's sort of like a secretive aspect of, and like again in I don't want to like generalize places, but like throughout Asia, for example, there seems to be like a more sort of honesty and awareness of what's going
more
on,
more openness about the practices, exactly. And slaughter, yeah. And you know, that can even be incorporated into celebrations, like particular Muslim celebrations. Of course there are vegan Muslims as well, but there's different culture, like it just, when I was briefly living in Switzerland, you know, I would share at this kitchen with 120 people from all around the world, because a lot of people are there to work for UN and international organizations. And a lot of the people would come and they'd bring like nearly like a quarter of a cow and just start hacking away in the kitchen. Mm. And that's not something that I'd ever seen in a Western kitchen. So it can be way more obvious. And you think about the wet markets that got quite famous with the COVID outbreak in China, very different to a lot of the places in the West, where we have this very sterilized, packaged, it's very separate from what you see in a slaughterhouse.
Yeah. And so, yeah, again, I think that is kind of relevant. And I think like stand-up comedy, again, particularly in the Western world, there's the idea of like, yeah, higher levels of animal consumption, again, generally much higher than in places like Asia, but also this idea we don't want to either see or do direct harm to animals, we just get the end product. And so you get this sort of like cognitive dissonance of that kind of believing one thing but doing another thing, and yeah, sort of raising this idea of like this harm behind animal consumption that we both know but also don't know or don't want to be reminded of. And I think that sort of explains that that sort of the audience pulling back a little bit compared to something like talking about, I don't know, the government doing something which doesn't have that same level of cognitive dissonance, I guess. But yeah, we are about out of time. I want to give a quick shout out to the Animal Liberation Film Festival. So we're talking about pop culture and animal rights today. So the official selections for the first ever Animal Liberation Film Festival have now been announced. These films bring to life the struggles and triumphs of animals and those fighting for change. So this festival showcasing animal liberation films is from the 5th to the 6th of December at Cinema Nova in Melbourne. You can access the... yeah, you can look at all those films, you can sign up for email updates, etc. at alff.org.au. That is alff.org.au. And we'll also be featuring an interview with people from the Animal Liberation Film Festival soon.
And so that's being held in Melbourne, obviously, in Australia.
Yep.
So it's the first time that this kind of film festival's been in Australia or in Melbourne, is that right?
The first one that I know of.
Okay.
So, yes, I think that is about all that we have for today. Thanks for joining me, Katie.
No worries.
And stay tuned for rotations. Here's some more music, different themes, different 3CR presenters. And we're going to finish up with another song from at least a potentially a vegan artist, someone who's... yeah, collaborate with Keshi and also has references about veganism in their music. So we're going to feature a song from Miles Bullen. The song is I Am Not For Everyone. So hopefully you like it. But if not, they are not for everyone. So that's okay if you don't. So yeah, here it is. Stay tuned for rotations. Thanks for joining me, Katie.
Thanks
and
for having me.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being here.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.